Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Free Virginia. I'm your host, Hank Reardon, and this is episode 20-17, the 17th episode of 2020. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about the lockdown farce, the mask farce, the riot farce. I'm going to be talking especially about the siege at 5th and Federal and the militia response to it, and what takeaways we can get from something like that, and how you can learn from this and move forward from there safely for you and your community. Now, how can you listen to Radio Free Virginia if you're a Christian patriot behind enemy lines like I am? Well, the best way is radiofreeva.com, radiofreeva.com. I post all the show notes there, so the links to the articles and the different things I talk about. And also, you can listen on Podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, Jack and the Beanstalk Bean, kind of Podbean. And I put the notes there as well. So, I'd also invite you to over to the Facebook page. I usually post interesting stuff that I find when I'm not being overwhelmed with lots of crazy stuff going on. Work has actually been a little bit slow, and I actually have a harder time coping with keeping things done and getting things done when work is slow, because I don't know what to do with myself. Find myself just vegging out and watching. I ran out of regular Star Trek, so now I think I'm on to Deep Space Nine, which is pretty terrible. But, you know, there's nothing else on. I've watched everything because of this lockdown, and now I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel here for things to watch. So let's talk about the lockdown farce, okay? So we're all told, hey, you have to social distance. You have to put a mask on. You don't care about people. You want them to die. I've talked all about these things. You know, bring out your dead. Well, ever since all this stuff started with this whole Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and all the other typical rabble, we've started to see that suddenly this doesn't matter anymore. Not if you're fighting for social justice. So let me read this. It's from thefederalist.com. The densely crowded protests would soon draw the attention of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Massachusetts Democrat Senator Elizabeth Warren, both over the age of 65, putting them at higher risk of serious complications from the Chinese virus. The sudden disregard for social distancing from avid lockdowners exposed the extreme measures that tanked the nation's economy and destroyed the nation's psyche to be nothing more than deeply unserious methods to combat the virus that poses nearly no danger to low-risk groups. More than 40 million Americans have now filed for unemployment. An estimated 100,000 small businesses have already permanently shut down. And I would say that number is going to continue to climb. About 1 in 3 Americans are experiencing signs of clinical anxiety and depression. 1 in 3? I mean, how can they possibly know that? All right, thousands of others have put critical health procedures on hold so hospitals could build adequate capacity for an overwhelming surge in cases that never came in most of the country. Yet while thousands gather in protest against police brutality across the country, no one seems to care about the ongoing public health pandemic after chastising those who dared break social distancing rules to reopen their states and reclaim their livelihoods. She's a witch! Burn the witch! We all see that, the shaming, the social shaming. Hey, you're mask shaming. You're not wearing a mask. You don't care. You don't care about people. You're killing people. You must wear a mask. Well, I was out, speaking of masks, our idiot governor, as you might or might not know, I would imagine you know, unless you haven't gone out in a couple weeks, just days after hanging out at the beach, taking selfies, hanging out with his homies, his communist homies down at Virginia Beach, he says, well, you know, we're going to have a mask mandate. Everyone's got to wear a mask. Oh, you mean like you were last weekend? Jerk. But good news. A lot of Americans aren't complying with this. However, bad news, plenty are. Plenty of Virginians still think this is okay. Well, I guess I got to wear a mask. I'll tell you what. I think if you're wearing a mask, if you see a person that's wearing their mask in their car by themselves, with the windows up, they're by themselves, knock on the window and tell them, go home and never leave your house again. You are too stupid to be amongst the rest of us in society. What are you going to catch, you moron, when you're in your car? So that's just one of the latest royal decrees from His Highness Lord Northam up in Virginia's capital. And so we have these riots going on. Well, I imagine you know that they're happening. You may or may not have seen the video of the police officer with his knee on the person's neck. You may or may not know that the other officer had his knee on the person's back. And I don't know about you, but I'd be squirming too if I had two big dudes on top of me. I mean, at some point, I'd probably calm down because I'd be dead like him. Now, I realize that we're not supposed to be guilty until guilty here in America. But apparently, the only people that can be guilty until guilty are police, Christians, patriots, gun owners. Basically, everybody except the innocent social justice warriors of Antifa and Black Lives Matter. And so we have all these riots going on. Everything's racist. You're a racist. The dog's racist. Everything's racist. And it's unfortunate because here's the deal. Let's say you're a Black Lives Matter activist. I think we could probably come to some agreement on some things. I think we could both agree that I think the police are too militarized, that their tactics are poor, that maybe the type of people they look for isn't necessarily always the best. And I'm not trying to be anti-cop here, but I think we could agree on some of these points that they make. I don't agree that more black people, blah, blah, blah. I don't agree with those talking points. Because if you're committing more crime, if you have a higher crime neighborhood, the police are going to be in your neighborhood. They're thus then going to pull you over and do what police do in a neighborhood like that. And if that neighborhood is predominantly minority and that neighborhood is poor, they're going to have more crime, and not because they're minority, because they're poor. That's just the reality. There's going to be more drug use. There's going to be more drunk driving. There's going to be more broken cars with broken taillights and broken headlights and all this other stuff. There's going to be the smell of marijuana coming out of the car. These things are going to happen in those certain neighborhoods. I think it was Charles Barkley that said, was it Charles Barkley or Shaq? It was one of the two of them that said, hey, you know, you don't want cops coming down in your neighborhood. Don't be committing crime. Well, it's a good point. You know, we got a lot of domestic disturbances going on. And you know, it's funny. These people that are rioting and causing problems and breaking things and protesting, there are genuine protesters here, not many, but some, they're plenty happy to call the police when they need them. Hey, someone's breaking in my car. Call the police. Hey, someone's breaking into my house. Call the police. I'm going to call the police. They're plenty happy to have the police come. Hey, my wife's beating me. My husband's beating me. Whatever. They're going to call the police. Or the neighbors are going to call the police. They don't even like the cops, and they're calling the cops. You know what I mean? I mean, here I asked a friend who actually listens to the show, and he was a police officer, and I asked him, I think, how on earth do they catch these people that commit these stupid crimes, these robberies, these whatevers, rob a little liquor store, they don't have liquor stores, rob a little convenience store in town, and then suddenly they have them days later. And he said, well, it's because these dummies don't ever leave their neighborhood. So they go and they commit crime. They go one block over. And everybody knows that it was Johnny. Johnny did it. And they may hate the cops, but they hate the criminals more. And so they call the cops on Johnny. So you've got a lot of crazy stuff happening in some of these communities. And it sucks. But it's not an excuse to burn your community down. And I think Americans need to stand up and say enough is enough to this stuff. Because clearly, and here's the other thing, liberal cities. I want you to look everywhere this is being done. This isn't being done in conservative cities with conservative mayors and conservative legislative bodies like, councils. And this isn't happening with conservative police chiefs and conservative sheriffs. This is happening in liberal communist enclaves. That's where this is happening. Even in Virginia, if this is happening in an area, say, oh, like Danville, well, you know, there's a lot of liberalism down there. So it's really unfortunate, and those law enforcement agencies either have their hands tied behind their backs or they've tied their hands behind their backs because they don't want to appear mean or racist or whatever. Well, I got news for you. These people don't care what you think. They don't care if you are racist or aren't racist. They will call you racist. That's where we part. We part ways. I'm done. Because while I can agree that some of these things are wrong, that many of these things are wrong, the second you devalue me because I'm white is no different than if I devalue you because you're black. You're a racist. You hate white people, clearly. It's all Whitey's fault. Kill Whitey. Kill the cops. You know, it's nonsense. And I'm not going to sign up and march with you. I'm not going to walk with you. I'm not going to chant your stupid chants, you know, no justice, no peace, and hands up, don't shoot, and all that stupid garbage. Because that hands up, don't shoot one, that's a bunch of garbage. That was the last time all this erupted, and that little punk, that huge punk, dude was over 6 feet tall. He just robbed a store, and the police officer is reaching into his car. So I don't want to hear about hands up, don't shoot. But as you can see, things are shifting, and the op tempo is shifting, where they're starting to be much more belligerent, much more violent, and they seem to have learned something that if you don't bring a gun to the fight, nobody can lawfully do anything to you. Because the cops don't have enough people. So, for example, you got a bunch of guys running down the street shooting people. The cops can just take a rifle and shoot you. Average citizens can shoot you. But if all you're doing is running around with a stick and breaking things, they can't shoot you. They have to use less lethal technology, which is which has its own issues, whatever they are. So you have tear gas, you have pepper balls. It's those paintballs that are basically a pepper spray inside the paintball. So when it hits you and it breaks, it's like being pepper sprayed. It's pretty awesome. They're expensive. I looked into them after the events of this weekend. I looked into them. They are for $160. You can get 90 of them. So you understand why when you see the police, they're not unloading a whole paintball gun's worth of stuff on people. It's pop, 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 because they're very expensive. I'm sure they're told you only get so many and then you don't get any more. You know, another option would just be to shoot them with paintballs. I mean, it hurts. So beanbag guns, they have two types. You know, they have a shotgun type, but they also have rubber bullets. They have, which sometimes those aren't always so less lethal. You hit a person in the right place, you can still kill them. You have, and you can maim them. You can maim them with a paintball. But you have these giant beanbags. They kind of look like, what are those, M60, I think it's called an M60 grenade launcher, about inch and a half in diameter. They dropped a dude this weekend with one of those, and it was awesome. This guy, I've never seen such a big guy fall to the ground so fast. I want to share this Facebook post with you. It says, scare people with a virus. Place them in quarantine. Count the number of dead every second of every day in every news headline. Close all businesses. 40 million out of jobs. Peak unemployment. Remove entertainment. Parks, gyms, bars, restaurants, sports. No dating. No touching. Mask people. Dehumanize them. Close temples and churches. Create a vacuum. Let depression and anxiety and desperation set in. Then ignite hatred and civil war, civil unrest. Empty the prisons because of the virus and fill the streets with criminals. Send in Antifa to vandalize property as if they're freedom fighters. Undermine the law. Loot. Attack law enforcement. But tell government to order a stand down. We are being baited by adversarial governments like China who want to destroy America and then have the far left abuse the racial wars to fuel the fires. And in an election year, Democrats blame all of it on the president. This is what modern warfare looks like. Vote red. red being Trump. And I will be. I'll be proudly voting Trump. So that was a great post. I think it perfectly sums up what's going on right now. We are being played. And I say to people, there's a great clip of Chris Tucker in the movie Rush Hour. And follow the rich white man.
Lee, let me introduce you to Carter's theory of criminal investigation. Follow the rich white man.
Follow the rich white man?
Exactly. Now you're learning. Every big crime has a rich white man behind it waiting for his cut. Now, in our case, we know who the rich white man is. Stephen Rain.
Who?
Stephen Rain, the hotel billionaire. I saw him on Ricky Tan's boat. When the shooting started, he was way too cool. Now, I'm gonna tell you something. When people start shooting, white people ain't that cool. They either running around, hiding behind tables, or screaming like, ah!
You sound like that all the time.
Let me tell you something about black people. When stuff goes down, we keep our cool.
Maybe, but not like Asians. We never panic.
Yeah, right. When Godzilla's coming, y'all be tripping. I seen the movie. You be, Gayaka, Gayaka!
Carter.
Yelling everywhere.
So we have Follow the Rich White Man is the theme here, the phrase. I say follow the liberal white instigator. And so I'm going to talk tonight, right now, before I talked about the siege of Fifth and Federal, I'm going to talk about Roanoke. Some friends and I went down and did a little recon. We wanted to see, what's this all about? What kind of people are they bringing in here? Who are the players? Who's really the heads of state in this this little shenanigans that are going on? And in the case of Roanoke, here's what happened. We arrived and there was a big giant crowd at Sheetz, and we couldn't figure out why'd they pick Sheetz. They didn't really have a reason. That's just it was a centralized location. So there was a big crowd in Sheetz. Imagine all the way out to every gas pump in front of a Sheetz, protesters. And they're just a ton of people, white and black, all kinds. And they're screaming at the police. They're doing their chants, you know, Black Lives Matter, no justice, no peace, I can't breathe, and those things. And the Roanoke police are there. Roanoke police is a very well-trained police department. I have a friend who is a police officer in Roanoke PD, and he told me all about the academy and his experience, and he was very fit, and it wore him down. I mean, it is a very, almost like boot camp is what he described it like. And so he said that they're very well trained, and I haven't had a chance to talk to him about what happened, but I could see that they were very well trained. So they were the main force there was Roanoke PD. They had certain streets strategically blocked off so you couldn't have this drive-through honking support the protesters thing. And then the funny thing was too, you had these motorcycle guys come through and they would rev their engines as loud, their Harleys and everything. And they were these hillbilly looking dudes and everyone is cheering. And I was just laughing because they weren't doing it to say, hey, good for you, Black Lives Matter. They were doing it because it was loud and obnoxious and they hate your guts, but you know, okay, you idiots. So they are protesting, they're doing their thing. This lasts about 15, 20 minutes. They shut all the lights off to Sheetz. I hear it on the announcement. I'm across the street and I'm watching all this through binoculars. And I hear on the announcements, it says, the Sheetz is closed. You're all now going to, if you don't leave, you'll be arrested for trespassing. And then, you know, you start to hear people, you know, F the police and this kind of stuff. And then we have a bunch of state police in riot gear start coming, marching across the street. And as soon as they get there, they light these people up with pepper balls and they scatter immediately. It was pretty awesome. So then we thought, I wonder where they're going to go next. Yeah, we hear, yeah, well, they'll probably go down somewhere where the police station is or where the jail is or whatever. Let's just go drive down there and see. So we did, we drove down there and we just parked and we got out. And we sat there, and it wasn't long before a crowd developed, and they're screaming the same old boring chants. But what we noticed about it, because we are closer this time, we're just standing there on the street, and it's probably a crowd about half the size of the one that was over at Sheetz. And who's instigating it but the white liberal agitator? And it's clearly an Antifa thug. I mean, you can't miss these. These guys can't help themselves but to look a certain way. They all wear this weird, like, sequined black jacket thing. I don't even know how to describe it. It's very weird. I'm not saying that the fashion sense is weird, although it is. What I mean is they all wear the same thing. It doesn't make sense to me. So, because if I was going to go in, I'd want to not be so easily identifiable. But they don't seem to care. So there's one of them on each side, and he's doing a security patrol about every 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes. He'll walk out about 100 feet, and he'll walk back 100 feet, and he can tell he's looking. He's got his head on a swivel, and I don't know who did their training or whatever, but you can tell he prepared for this, and he spots us, and he's trying to stare me down, and he's looking and walks up and down, walks up, and he's realized we're not doing anything. We're just standing there, so he kind of starts to ignore us after a little while. But the same thing is happening on the other side, and right in the middle is this white guy, you know, kind of Birkenstock hipster-looking dude, and he is screaming in the cop's face about injustice and racism and all this other stuff. So follow the liberal white instigator, because those guys are the ones that are hijacking a movement of people that genuinely think that there's racism in America. And, you know, if there was, or if they really feel that, they have every right to protest. They don't have every right to riot, but they have every right to say, hey, we believe this is an injustice and this is wrong. And then we can have a genuine conversation about that. Once you cross the line, start throwing rocks, start breaking things, start hurting people, burning their businesses to the ground, no, we have nothing left to talk about. Your movement, we have nothing to work on. So let's now talk about a day later. So we'll call this the Siege of Fifth and Federal. Fifth and Federal is a business restaurant in Lynchburg, Virginia. It is at the corner of Fifth and Federal. Real original, right? Next to it is Adams Motor Company. It's really just a kind of a car museum. There's some really nice cars just in the window. And same man owns both locations. We got a call around 7 o'clock or so. Said, hey, you know, would anybody be willing to come and just kind of stand guard, you know, hang out over the night, we'll feed you. You can just hang out and just make sure, you know, that the place doesn't get looted. Because we're really worried that this crowd's going to get a little rowdy. And there was about, I don't know, 50 to 100 people just throughout the day. There was a crowd of people, most of them just holding signs, occasionally doing a chant, nothing real rowdy. And so we showed up. We said, okay, yeah, we can do that. And so I put the word out, said, hey, we're looking for volunteers. Sent a message to a couple different militia folks that I knew and said, hey, you know, we're looking for volunteers who want to do this. Just making sure that nothing happens to this guy's business. You're going to want to bring all your kit and we'll just hang out. We put the call out at 7 and we were on scene by 8:30 with almost 20. And it was about 16, and then a few more showed up by about 9:15. So, but we rolled in. We tried to be real discreet. You know, we weren't wearing camouflage. We were wearing normal-looking clothes, and we were all concealed carrying. We did have all our kit. We had our rifles and everything. So what we did was we loaded that into a couple vehicles that we could back right up to the kitchen door, and we then offloaded those things. So that everything just, we made sure that we weren't escalating anything. We just wanted to get inside and just relax. At the time, they had a bunch of, let's see, probably 8 to 10 customers in the place who were just friends of the business. It's like, yeah, I'm going to come support you, you know? So let me backtrack, because I forgot to tell you why this all happened. So Jerry Falwell Jr. posts a picture up on in the Liberty, his, I think it was his, not Liberty's, but he's the chancellor of Liberty University. Sorry. So he posts a thing up that says, hey, I want to get a mask because, you know, the governor's going to make us all wear masks. What about this one? And it's a picture of Ralph Northam, the governor's college yearbook, where he's either in blackface or wearing a Klan uniform. Not really sure which one, because he won't admit which one, but we know it's one of those. And so, yeah, it's racist because he is a racist. And everyone doesn't understand the context of this, so they get very angry. Well, then Fifth and Federal's owner says, hey, can I get a couple of those? Oh my gosh. You'd think he lynched a black person in his front of his restaurant. My gosh, it was ridiculous. And so, you know, we got there. This is all happening. There's a rowdy crowd. There's a whopping 5 police officers out front, and they have no masks, no riot gear, no nothing. They're just standing there taking the abuse from the crowd. And there's too few of them to actually push the crowd to the street where they belong because they're trespassing. So they can't push them to the street. And they're just there. And at one point I asked the commanding police officer, who was a corporal, I said, hey, they're trespassing. Can you push them to the street? And he said, we're kind of outnumbered here. And so I said, okay. So I went inside and told them that. And we occasionally would come out. So we had a couple guys out on the side here, you know, keeping an eye on things and just standing there. And they would come up, protesters would come up. And here's the frustrating part about the crowd. They're not interested in our viewpoint. They're not interested even when we agree with them. She's holding a sign and she's screaming at me. She said, murder is murder. Murder is murder. And I said, you know what? I agree with you. And she said, see, everybody, this boy's racist. I said, but I just agreed with you. Racist, you know, she's like cussing and stuff. And I'm okay, fine. So I moved away. And another time somebody holds up a sign. It's got some acronym on it. And I said, well, what's that mean? And she says, it means this. I can't remember what it was. And I said, well, you know what? I agree with that. And she's like, see, it's all about racism. And these guys are, I said, oh, that's it. I'm done. I'm not going to try and engage because y'all don't want to listen to a word we have to say. We helped escort some patrons out. And one of them was actually black. And we're helping them get out safely. And they're screaming at us that we're racist. Okay. So way to build bridges, guys and gals. And so the crowd gets rowdier and rowdier as time goes on. And it starts to swell a little bit. And at around 11:15, and we have video proof of this. The argument that what we're told is, oh, shots were fired by the militia from the roof. Well, we have video proof that it was M-80s. What we said it was from the beginning. And everyone on the ground knows it was. And the police know it was. But it was M-80s, and two of them got lit off, and it was shortly after about 4 to 6 white dudes showed up that happened. And one of the guys who was actually screaming the loudest and causing the biggest problems was a white guy. We call him Flannel Shirt, because of course I don't know his name. And then the other guys were fat white guys. So, you know, there was 2 fat white guys, and that's what we called them, the fat white guys. And then you had everybody else that was there started to throw things. First, it started with water bottles because, you know, it was hot. And so they had water bottles out for everybody because, you know, hey, why not? And I don't think they were supplied by the restaurant, but they started throwing those. And we had one of the roll up doors of the restaurant open. So we rolled that down and closed it. And we thought, well, you know, let's try and de-escalate things. Hey, shut all the lights off. Let's just kind of chill things out here. And so we shut the lights off. And it wasn't too long after that they started picking up rocks from across the street. Now, these weren't placed strategically, as I know is happening in some cities. These were part of the landscaping of the clinic across the street. So they started picking up these rocks, and they're throwing the rocks at the building, and they're breaking the windows. Well, and they're throwing them with precision. They're hitting just the right spot in the center of the window, and then they would be able to get that rock through the same hole. These guys were impressive. So they continue to do this, as breaking windows. It goes on and on and on. And as time goes on throughout the night, so we're in the building. There's 21 of us in the building, and there's a couple that couldn't get out. We tried to escort them out, and it was just too rowdy. He said, okay, you know, it's probably better if you just stay. You'll be safe in here. You know, we've all got guns, and, you know, nothing's going to happen, at least in that regard. And so they just stayed in the back kitchen area, and, you know, they were safe. And they were from Kansas, very nice couple. He was actually open carrying, cool guy, and they're hanging out, and we're all just hunkered down. And every once in a while, a rock will come through, we'll scream, rock, and bam, it'll slam into the back wall or slam into, you know, the bar or a table or whatever. And so the more rocks, more breakings of the window, the more rocks are coming in because now there's nothing to stop.
Watch yourself, John. You want to back up?
Going back.
Watch out.
Back out.
Back out.
Hey, listen. Hey, John, listen. They're up there. Watch out for glass. Flying glass.
Ah.
Cops are out there on the left side. This is a whole lot crazier than I thought Lynchburgers would go, honestly. I'm a little confused they're go to. I'm surprised. I'll just leave it.
Smoke. But smoke doesn't do much to anything.
Watch right in front. Watch right in front. Heads right there.
This is what it looked like. This is what it currently looked like on 5th and Federal. This is what it currently looked like. This is what it currently looked like, 5th and Federal.
This continues to go on, and it kind of goes on in these swells. Imagine like the ocean, you know, it's like a big swell. Kind of big, big wave, and then nothing, and then a big, big wave, and then nothing. And we have the police vehicle is being destroyed up top, and they're up the hill about 300-400 feet away. And they get we hear this on the scanner, and they say, "Hey, well, okay, is there a rifle inside?" And we're actually having a discussion. If they get close to getting that rifle, we're bolting out the door. We're gonna stop them, and because the cops they're completely out of their depth here. This is technically, it's really just a small town. It's not, they call it Lynchburg City. It's a small town. Give me a break. They're not trained for riots. We're not prepared for this here in Lynchburg. And we assume that they were because we just seen Roanoke. Oh, they'll deal with these guys quick. No, they didn't. So from a little after 11, it continues to go on. Continues to build, and as they go up to deal with the cop car, about 8 to 10 officers go running by the front of the building. They run up, and then a few minutes later, they're running back this way. We hear we recovered the weapon, and that's all. The car was totally smashed up, and windows are all smashed. One of the police car was an SUV. One of them got bullet holes in it, so one of them shot up one of the rioters shot up the cop car, and so. The problem is that at that point, the protesters had pretty much left. They got bored with throwing rocks, and we had de-escalated. We weren't doing anything, and so we said, okay, and great. And the cops all of a sudden come running back, and who do they bring with them? All the dang rioters. And so the rioters are now back, and they're mad, and now they're throwing rocks at the cops who are running away. And now they're like, hey, let's throw more rocks at 5th and Federal. And, oh, look, Adams Motor Company. There's some nice cars in there. Let's break this place, too. And then they start smashing windows, and you can hear the glass breaking. This is not safety glass. This is just, you know, big sheets of glass. These giant glass windows are shattering and just come crashing down. And they just continue this on and on and on. And then a call comes in. They're breaking into the antique store about a block away. They say, okay. So they go running up the street. And they get chased and they come running back down. And they brought them back again to throw more rocks at 5th and Federal. And, of course, Adams Motor Company. And now all the cars are exposed. And so now they're smashing the cars. And they're going inside and they're throwing rocks on the inside at the cars. This goes on and on and on. And we keep thinking, my gosh, what is going on? Where are the police? And we have a problem. We're equipped for lethal force. That's all we're equipped for. We don't have we don't have pepper spray. We don't have pepper balls, rubber bullets. We don't have anything. We can't respond at all. We can't even throw fireworks at them because we don't have that. All we have is lethal force. And they're not escalating. And we heard it on one of the videos that if you care to search around, you can hear they're like, well, we can't go in there, we got to flush them out because they'll shoot us if we go in there. With darn right, that was our line. We said if they come inside, we will fire. We had a clearly defined rules of engagement when we set everything up and said, hey, if this happens, you know, you just need to understand you're really on your own. This isn't a group effort. We're not all going down for this. If you shoot a dude, that's on you. And so you need to understand it needs to be justifiable. It needs to be justified. And so we had a clear understanding of that, but we're just stuck. We're just like, we're 2.5 hours at this point into this, and they haven't made a single arrest, and they haven't even fired tear gas or pepper spray or rubber bullets or pepper balls, nothing. And I know for a fact that they were setting up with this stuff hours before. So I don't know what they're waiting for at this point, because I'm looking at live streams and people are talking about, hey, they're behind this place getting geared up. Everybody be careful, watch out. And they're, you know, telling each other in the comments what to do and what to watch out for. And so all we could do was wait. And eventually we kept hearing on the scanner, hey, the state police and local sheriffs are on the way. And so by, let's see, midnight, it was probably midnight, I put a call out over the phone and the radio via some apps and some other stuff to the militia in the surrounding counties. And I said, hey, they're clearly not equipped for what's going down here. We need more people down here. And so they did an amazing job. They called up over 20 guys that were fully kitted out and ready to go. And we've built a good relationship with local law enforcement. And so they pretty much got walked right up to the scene. Now, by the time that they got there, the state police had finally, you know, showed up. The TAC team was finally geared up. And so they bring in the armored car. This is about, I'd say, about 10 minutes before reinforcement showed up. They have, you know, one of these armored cars. It's not an MRAP. It's actually just this armored police vehicle. And they have it, and they got it on the loudspeaker. And this is Sergeant so-and-so with the Lynchburg Police Department. You must disperse. You're in violation of the law, blah, blah, blah. The guy is hopped up on adrenaline. He's hopped up on adrenaline. He's hopped up on drugs. I don't know. But this dude isn't having it. And he's got this big sheet of drywall, and it's got BLM on it, you know, and he's slamming it down on the ground and pushing it up against the car, the armored car, pounding on the hood. And these police officers are cowering in the back of this thing. And I'm flabbergasted at this point. I'm just like, what the heck is going on? Just grab the dude, you know, beanbag him. I don't know. Do something. Deal with this guy. And they pop a few canisters of tear gas, and it starts to actually blow. Now all the windows are busted out at Fifth and Federal, so now it's blowing in the windows, and I'm thinking, oh, that's tear gas. Oh gosh. And I said, so I put I had a bandana, and I put that over my mouth, and it actually helped a lot with the breathing of that. So this goes on for 5-10 minutes, where they're just basically over the loudspeaker and doing the, I think that's called the LRAD, which is a very loud noise, you know, it's kind of a noise. And they're trying to get this guy to back down, and he's not having it. And so finally he walks away, and this is the funniest thing. So he walks away about, I don't know, 15 feet, and they nudge the truck forward. The drywall falls down, and this like sets the dude off. He's just furious, and he comes stomping over, you know, he's shaking his hands, and they move forward and they say, get on the ground. He's like, he's like, I'm not having that. Shoot me, or so. I can't remember what he said. And they lit this dude up with one beanbag thing out of this mortar launcher tube thing. And he dropped so fast, and you could hear, I mean, we're all cheering inside Fifth and Federal. Like they finally, after 3 hours, have arrested somebody. 3 hours. My gosh, what the heck is going on? And so they then start to push up the street, and they're popping tear gas, and finally we can get out. We can finally exit the building now. And then we see the other local responding sheriff's department shows up. Our other guys, our guys are here, and they're across the street waiting for all this to clear out and everything. And it was then finally over. And so I eventually, we got everyone together. We kind of came up with a game plan for the rest of the night. I said, look, most of us that have been here all night, we're pretty spent. I mean, you imagine 3 hours 4 hours of adrenaline dumping into your system over and over, you're pretty wiped out. And so I said, you know, I think I'm going to go home. I think everything's pretty much under control at this point. I'll leave my phone on loud. You just call me if you need me, and I'll keep my gear handy. But yeah, and then we took off and left about 10 guys and stayed till about sunrise. And then most of them took off. At that point, the riders, two got arrested. I spoke with the Lynchburg Police Department's intel guy today, and he is actively, they're scouring social media. They're getting tips. People are, you know, saying, oh, I know who that is. That's this person. And they, you know, they asked me, will you testify? I said, heck yeah. Heck yeah, I'll testify. And by the way, there's this one particular dude I'd like to testify against because he threw more rocks than anybody. And I pointed him out to the police. He came through the, there's a roundabout there. And we're standing out there, 40 of us now out front of the place. And he comes through and he does this little sweet little innocent, officer, is it okay if I go that way? And I screamed out at the officer. I said, don't let him go anywhere. That dude threw more rocks than anybody. And the officer kind of just shrugged. There was nothing he could do, you know? So he went, well, I actually mentioned that. And the intel guy says, yeah, you know, actually, I've seen the body cam footage. We were looking for that guy. And I said, well, good. You find him, I will testify. So we'll see. I mean, they'll definitely get some guys after the fact. So what can we take away from this? I want to share with you my takeaways. One, nobody's coming for you. So you better get that through your head, because I thought the police were coming for us. I didn't expect them to save me. I didn't need them to save me. I wasn't worried, you know, that we set out with a mission to prevent the place from being looted and burned to the ground. We succeeded. But it wasn't the success that I was hoping for. I was hoping that our mere presence would have deterred that, because I was also hoping that the police would be able to do their jobs, and they didn't. So nobody's coming for you. And because of this, I made decisions to not call reinforcements sooner. And you know, they responded faster than I could have imagined. I mean, when you consider that the local militias have had a real delay in our ability to prep and get ready, I mean, it was phenomenal. We over the evening fielded between the local, you know, I won't get into the counties that were involved, but the local militias that were here, over 40 guys. And I know that if we wanted to do a full call up, if we had the planning and the preparation, that we could have probably gotten 100 people there. But we made assumptions that the police would be able to do their job. Now, whether I'm not faulting the law enforcement officers. I know they do have a tough job, but I'm faulting their leadership, because I know that they have a TAC team. I know they do. And I know that TAC team has had this training and has the gear and has rubber bullets and has these things. They didn't do a dang thing. They were willing, if it wasn't for us in that building, they would have let that place burn to the ground. There wasn't a thing that they were going to do. So knowing all that, here are my takeaways. When you're going to do anything, whether a small group or as a militia or whatever, you have to do a pre-deployment risk assessment. You have to. Can we handle this? What's the risks? What's going to happen? Why? Because if we had done that, we might have thought, maybe we should get some guys that have some paintball guns, or get some less lethal stuff. And that's being addressed. You need to have a clear chain of command, you know, and control. You have to establish that ahead of time. Whether that's offsite or onsite, you have to have somebody that's giving commands. Otherwise, you know, it could get crazy. Now, I want to, you know, give a huge shout out to my friend. I'm going to call him, for safety reasons and security, just call him the farmer. This guy was an amazing leader, just constantly able to really have a good understanding of the entire battle that was going on. I mean, he was inside and viewing outside and watching and checking on other guys. I mean, he just did an outstanding job. And, you know, it's exactly the kind of leader under pressure you want. And I also want to commend the men inside that building who held. And when I mean held, it would have been really easy to take that safety off and blast a few fools. and they would have deserved it. That would have been bad the following days, and really, really would have caused problems for the movement of the militia. I mean, we established ourselves as cool and calm and collected guys, and so we're able to then approach law enforcement now and say, hey, you know, all the guys are in that building. We're in the militia. Use us. Even if they're just using us for other stuff like gathering intel, you know, use us. We're not, we don't, you know, we can sit on a street corner and feed you information, whatever you need us for. And so that's great because we're able to start making inroads in there. Number three, you have to set up a incident command post or a tactical ops center, depending on, I guess, each would have its own purposes, and it depends, you know, for your situation. Develop a ready condition status for your members so that your ICP or TOC can know how many people they can field. They can have a list and they can say, okay, we have 10 people in ready condition one. They can be here in 15 minutes. We have 20 people in condition two. They can be here in 35, 40 minutes. And we have about 100 people in condition three. They can be here within 2 hours. So they know immediately, okay, I know if there's a situation, I can field this many guys. All right. So you need an intel and battle tracking team, though, that can monitor social media offsite and know who the players are and where they are. And so I would recommend Forward Observer does a whole class on all of this. And they've done live battle tracking of Ferguson and other riots and things like that. And so having intel live is critical. We thought that the state, so we didn't have anybody on the outside. So we thought that, hey, you know, we kept hearing over the scanner, state police and local law enforcement are on the way. So we thought, oh, any minute now, 3 hours later, we need comms to interface with the TOC, or the ICP, and any teams on the ground. So better scanners. And a couple of the guys had these amazing scanners. They were able to pick up the local law enforcement, state police, the what's called LINCOM, which is the local area 911 dispatch. And so we had all this great stuff. That's great. And so we're talking about now looking at maybe a commercial digital radio option for us, maybe something that has encryption. We pushed this off to the comm ops guys and need to develop a frequency call sign brevity codes, you know, for use. So something that can be handed out at a briefing. So it's already pre-printed and, you know, bam, here you go. Team one, team two, team three, team four. And so go, here's your assignment, go. We also need a liaison person that's willing to go down and interact with law enforcement. If we have people in an area or in a building, you know, they didn't know what was going on. We would hear over the 911 dispatch, well, we have people, we don't know how many, we don't know. I'm like, golly, we've called four times. And so we would call again and say, hey, we hear that you guys need to know, we're fine, nobody's injured, blah, blah, blah. They kept trying to get us a couple of times. Hey, you guys want to come out? And we're like, no, we're not leaving. You know, they're going to burn this place to the ground. They've said so. They said so in the crowd. Or, you know, no. You have to have clearly defined rules of engagement. You know, you all have to agree to this. And I would recommend, you know, we really need to draw up, say, three levels of rules of engagement so that we can have everyone that's on board and that's there. I want you to sign this so that you understand. Here's the rules of engagement. I don't want to hear about I didn't know. So that if something goes down, you can, you know, not that the media is going to be our friend, but you can hold it up and you can say, hey, we did everything we could to avoid this from happening. And you'll have some outs, even though medical personnel. And this has been one of the shortcomings of our group, is we've really tried to develop medics, and it's challenging. So we're working on that. Safety gear. I mean, you imagine you're having rocks thrown at you. You need safety gear, you know, helmets, maybe with face shields, or at the very least, safety glasses. If you're ever in a place where rocks are being thrown or bricks, it's just, you're going to need that. Rally points. Rally points need to be less public. I keep hearing stuff where you're meeting at this park. No, that is too public. So you've got to find a rally point that is fairly, just not so public, maybe behind a business, something like that. So Just something to keep in mind. Your rally points for your different militia platoons. They shouldn't all be the same. You know, rally up, you can get instructions from there. And one of the big ones, and these aren't really in any order of importance, by the way. One of the big ones is less lethal gear. I mean, if we're going to do things like this ever, and some are pushing back on some of this. They're like, hey, it's not my job to protect somebody's business. No, but it's my job to make sure our community doesn't burn down. I mean, that's the way I look at it. And so, you know, rubber bullets, I mean, just, gosh, if we had paintballs, just paintballs, I think we could have deterred a lot of this. Every time somebody picked up a rock, we lit them up with paintballs. You know what? I'd go to jail for that. I don't care. You know, good luck. Good luck getting a conviction. That guy was destroying this place, and I lit him up. Darn right. Pepper balls, which I mentioned, they're expensive, but, you know, they're good. Pepper spray. A bullhorn would have been good because then we could talk to them and say, hey, you need to back off. Designated photographers and video people to, or a video person to capture evidence. You got all this crazy stuff going on. And after the fact, if you can't do anything about it then because of whether your stuff's all lethal or whatever, you know, you got video evidence. It'd be really nice if I had. So I've got a real good camera. Now, the funny thing is it showed up a day after all this. If I would have had some really nice still shots of these dudes holding rocks as they're about to throw them, and then another shot of the rock leaving their hands, that's a felony. To throw a missile, which is anything, any object, at a occupied structure is a felony. It would be really good to have that. Most of the video we have is crummy, low light quality Facebook Live stuff. Maps, you know, having maps of your AO so that you can put that up on a wall or put that out on a table at your back of the truck incident command post. You know, you need maps, and the people that are responding are going to need maps. You know, technology isn't great, is fallible. And, you know, frankly, if things continue to devolve into this lawlessness, I can imagine we might be doing things that might not be 100% lawful. And so if that's the case, you're not going to want your phone tracking your every movement. All right. So think about that. And then I think finally, we have to make our wives understand they can't call 911 to find out if their man is okay. And I'm not kidding you, this happened. And it's not acceptable. You have to make your significant other understand that you'll be fine. My wife has seen me for years. I've been doing training like this and doing stuff out in the woods, overnights, you know, sneaking around when crazy stuff's going on, taking pictures. I've been doing this for many years. And so she says, oh, yeah, be careful. And I'll send her a picture of something. I'll send her some pictures of these. And I was live streaming some of this so people could see, hey, I just want you to understand what's going on here. She actually called me, but she wouldn't have called 911. She knows better. So you gotta just make sure that doesn't happen. So that's the siege of Fifth and Federal. I hope you enjoyed the tale. Things are still moving on. I'm hoping lots of prosecutions happen. So I want to finally mention a book that I just finished. It was an audiobook. It was very, very good. There is language in it, I have to tell you. So whether you read the print or get the audiobook, it's in there. The author is great. And so in this book, it's A Handful of Hard Men, and it is about the Rhodesian SAS, which is Special Air Service. Man, these guys, you think the other guys I talked about in the last thing were tough? These guys were tough too. But what I like about this author is he does a fantastic job of weaving the history of what was happening at the time into the tales of what was going on. Fantastic job. The guy reading it, it takes a little getting used to. Some of it he almost reads like it's poetry. And so, but there's just some really just great stories. Lots of times I was laughing at the craziness of what was going on. I've often said, you know, boy, if they would have just killed Mugabe, I found out after listening to this, they had over five attempts to kill him, and they all seemed to just go wrong at the last minute. And so they were fairly confident somebody was tipping him off. But also, they were called off. He had him in his sights a couple of times, but he was such a good soldier that he wouldn't pull the trigger. And, man, it's too bad he didn't. I think it really would have helped the Rhodesian people. Militias are forming again. So a couple different announcements here. June 20th is Hanover. Prince William County was doing, let's see, that was recent. They did a pre-muster. So they're looking at, that's going to start to happen pretty soon. June 20th, also Nelson County. So those are the ones I have. If you have a militia that you would like me to talk about and mention, by all means, I would be happy to share that. And if you are thinking, you know what, now's the time. Well, actually, 2 months ago was the time, and ever since has been the time. But if you're thinking, you know what, I'm going to do it because no one's doing it. No one's stepping up and making it happen. Well, congratulations. You're the dude or you're the gal, whatever. Get out there and form your militia. Make it happen. If you go to gunownersofvirginia.org, you can find everything you'd need to form up a militia. Everything's right there. And I can help you with, shoot me an email through there. All the emails from there come to me. I can help you with your Facebook marketing, such as it will be allowed. Give you tips and everything. I've talked about this on a previous show. Go look that up. But form your militia. Now is a great time. People are starting to see the benefits of this and why it can be a good thing. And lots of counties have passed Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions. So, hey, the opportunities are there to do it. Just stay safe, everyone. Just keep things have started to die down, it looks like, at least here locally. I think they've arrested most of the ringleaders. But keep your eyes open. They'll probably, Antifa and Black Lives Matter's national organization side will probably be busing in or carpooling in troublemakers. So you got to keep an eye on things and see what you can do. If nothing else, if you've got a good camera, go stand by somewhere. I would, you know, definitely go armed, but go take pictures of these thugs and criminals, because the police are going to need that, because they're not dealing with these people on at the time. So everybody have a wonderful week. I want to thank you for listening. This is Hank Reardon, Radio Free Virginia. God bless America.